Welcome to Open Minds Radio with Alejandro Rojas. Open Minds Radio is your UFO news authority, presenting evidence and the latest news regarding the UFO phenomenon. Here's your host, Alejandro Rojas.
For the music to fade, and we are on. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Open Minds Radio, where we talk about UFOs, The Simpsons once in a while. We talk about, that's about it though, really. Aliens, and we talk about Jason's hair. That's right, thanks for reminding me. It's a cool little faux hawk going on. Sometimes it's a real mohawk. It's up to you, I don't know. We'll ask Jason later in the show more about that. We have a great show today. We have the ex-director of MUFON, Clifford Cliff. And I was thinking about it, and I think that by far, Clifford has been the wittiest MUFON director in history. And this is an organization that's been around since the late 60s. So that's saying something, and I'm going to prove my words by having him on the show later today because he is so witty he cannot help himself but make some jokes and be a funny guy. And so we will prove that later on because he certainly will not be able to resist when we talk. He's a great guy. He just actually recently retired from MUFON and as a director, and so we'll talk to him about that. I know some of you may feel there is some sort of controversy and maybe, you know, the government got to him. We'll ask him, or that maybe he, you know, said, you guys are jacked, I'm out of here. So we'll ask him about that. Honestly, though, I already know it's nothing that exciting. It's just that he needed to retire. He's an older guy. He's been retired from business for a while now, and he has worked so hard for the last years with MUFON. And he wants it to continue and everything, but he just doesn't have the energy anymore to keep it up. He's going to kind of tone down a little bit and relax and spend time with his family because he wants to actually, you know, when you retire, that's your time to spend time with family, and he wants to do that before the end. So we will talk to Cliff about some of the great UFO cases that he experienced during his years at MUFON. We will talk about maybe some of the trials and tribulations and what he found difficult, but what he found good and great, and what, you know, maybe we don't see as a general public when it comes to the behind the scenes, some of the magic behind MUFON. If anybody would know that, it'll be Cliff. So it's going to be great. I always love having him on. And he is going to be speaking at the UFO Congress coming up in a couple of weeks here. So that's great. He has a lot of cases, MUFON cases, that he's real excited about that he wants to present. So he will be there doing that. So we're excited to see Cliff again. He's always a lot of fun. If you were at the Congress last year, you remember he sent us kind of a video hello to the Congress that we played there, and that was a lot of fun too. So now he will be there in person. So that's wonderful, I think. So we'll talk to him in just a few minutes. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's going to be extremely informative, and you are just going to have a really good time, as usual, listening to Open Minds Radio. Speaking of having a really good time, Maureen is helping to coordinate the UFO Congress, and she's a lot of fun. And that's another reason you want to come to the UFO Congress in 2 weeks, ladies and gentlemen. This thing is rolling up on us. You're going to see Stephen Greer. You're going to see Colin Andrews. You're going to see Whitley Strieber. You're going to see some of our buddies who we've had on the show recently, Lee Spiegel. You're going to see Bryce Zabel. You're going to see Ben Hansen from the hit television documentary series Fact or Faked, where they're talking about UFOs. And he has some incredible cases he sent us lately that he says are absolutely amazing. You're going to see a general, ladies and gentlemen. And this is a general from a country that is actually doing real official government UFO investigations, and this guy's in charge of it. So this is, yeah, this is going to be really cool. Jason's real excited. You should see him over here. He's Twitter-pated, I think would be the good word. Speaking of which, you know, Twitter, if you follow the Open Minds TV Twitter, you'll be able to get up to date on all the latest and greatest. And Lynn Katai, who we've had on the show, I guess, is now signed up for the Congress, I think I heard was the latest news. I think this is some rumor that I heard around here, but she's from the area, so I'm sure she'll be there. There's going to be other people that will be there, even if they're not going to be speaking, such as Grant Cameron and Paula Harris. Some other speakers are people that we've had on the show recently. I know a lot of people love the Grant Cameron show. I did, because Grant Cameron is awesome, and I love his research, so that was really cool. Yes, Dan Romanek from last year, he was pretty much one of the most popular speakers last year. And he's going to be there selling books because he has a new one out. And his wife, and we talked to her about that, and we'll do that again. Maybe we'll have just her by herself. But we talked to her about the book she's working on. That is now finished, and you'll be able to get that. Maybe some of you saw them in Phoenix. They came here a few months ago, and they had, you know, a standing room only audience where people had a lot of fun. And her book wasn't finished then, but it is now, so you'll be able to get that. And the other showstopper, actually, last time the big show was Travis Walton, who will be speaking again. He's the only one speaking again for a second time in a row. And then everybody's favorite, especially if you live in Mexico, Jaime Maussan will be there, and he'll be doing a Spanish. So if you are speaking or listening to the show and you can't understand it because your primary language is Spanish and you don't know much English, but you listen anyway because you like to hear UFO once in a while and go, oh yeah, UFO, that's great. Jaime Maussan está aquí en Februario. I don't know a whole lot of Spanish, but I'm pretty sure I just told the Spanish-speaking listeners that Jaime is going to be here in February. I'm pretty sure that's what I said. So anyway, we are talking to Spanish media because he's going to address and have a Spanish kind of address along with the general from Chile, who also, of course, speaks Spanish. So that's going to be really cool. So there's a lot going on. It's a beautiful venue, and it's a lot of fun. So it's coming down to the wire. If you've been planning on going and you've just been procrastinating, you better go register. So UFOCongress.com. Is there anything I forgot, Jason? Okay. Well, I just mentioned Jason, who is someone that, you know, when you mention this guy, people get excited. There are teenage girls screaming at the top of their lungs right now because they are just so excited to hear from Jason McClellan, who is always on the show every week to tell us about the UFO news that he follows on a daily basis. And this week, yet again, we have some spectacular news. Jason, thanks for being on the show again. Tell us all about this wonderful UFO news from this week.
I am happy to do so, my friend, and I am happy that I'm the one delivering the news and not you, because apparently your fact-checking isn't very accurate.
Uh-oh.
I don't know about your teenage girl story.
Oh, well, you never know. I think there are. They're out there.
All right.
I can almost hear it now.
No, that's just Maureen.
Oh, settle down, Maureen.
All right. Well, greetings, everyone. This is your Open Minds News Brief for Monday, February 6th, 2012. I like this story, Alejandro. This is a strange, cool story from a couple weeks ago. But translucent blue spheres rained down from the sky in Dorset, UK during a hailstorm 2 weeks ago. According to Popular Science, British authorities say that, quote, tiny one-inch gelatinous spheres are odorless, are not sticky, and are not meteorological, end quote. Former aircraft engineer Steve Hornsby discovered approximately 12 of these spheres in his yard on the afternoon of Thursday, January 26. The BBC explains that Hornsby kept the objects in his freezer to prevent them from melting, but later determined that it wasn't necessary because the objects don't melt at room temperature. There is speculation that these mysterious spheres could simply be, quote, marine invertebrate eggs that stuck to a bird's feet, and were carried into the air. But for now, as popular science explains, quote, no one has any real clue what they are.
Interesting. I actually did not hear about this story. This is the first time I'm hearing about this.
It wasn't picked up by very many places, mm-hmm. but Popular Science had an article on it.
Hmm.
And they showed pictures of these blue gelatinous spheres.
Hmm.
And they rained down on this guy's yard, and he collected them. Some of them kind of shattered, but some were still intact. And he put them in his fridge, but then took them out and kind of squishy little balls.
Did he try to eat one?
Oh, I hope not. But, you know, our colleague Maureen made a good suggestion, and that, you know, we've seen blue things from the sky before, and blue, that's the dangerous indicator that it could be some dumping from an airplane lavatory.
Uh-oh, which has happened.
But, you know, that might make sense if it were solid, you know, melted or frozen from being high in the atmosphere and coming down. But this remained in this ball form. So
weird.
I don't think it was toilet material, but
hopefully someone will analyze it to figure out what the heck this is.
Yeah. I mean, the only theory they could come up with was this marine invertebrate eggs, which seems kind of weird. I mean, these didn't look like eggs to me, but I'm not a marine biologist. I don't know about eggs of birds or anything, but these were squishy blue kind of jello balls.
Very strange.
Very strange. Yeah, I'm surprised more people didn't pick up on it. But
yeah, because that's weird stuff. That's cool.
But I'll keep looking for additional information on that. I hope they do some sort of testing or something.
Yeah.
But fascinating.
Very.
Another great story out of the UK. They always deliver the good stories.
Yep.
Well, here's a good story from Mexico. A UFO flew over an airport in Mexicali, Mexico last week, and the craft was reportedly pursued by the police. According to La Voz de la Frontera, police received hundreds of calls about a strange device in the air. The UFO was seen in the area of the Mexicali airport and was described by witnesses as a round object emitting white light. Witnesses also reported seeing blue and yellow flashing lights on the object. One of the police officers who pursued the object explained that the UFO moved at very fast speeds, moving up, down, and sideways, and would suddenly change its course. The website IO9 suggests that the UFO recorded on video over Tijuana, Mexico on January 27th could be the same UFO that taunted police in Mexicali, as they say, but that's just speculation they made. So there were two UFOs, you know, one in Tijuana and one in Mexicali. They weren't necessarily related, but what they looked like seemed to share a little bit of similarities based on their description. But the one that received hundreds of calls from witnesses and resulted in the pursuit by police is pretty fascinating.
And it was on video. Someone got a video.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the video doesn't tell us a lot. It's a bright light in the sky, although this was a daytime one, right? I'm pretty sure this was a daytime one. Or was it night? I can't remember right now. But a bright light in the sky, but it's still hard to tell what it might be. So here's another one where the video alone doesn't tell you a whole lot. But the cops saying that they chased it and that it zoomed around and
took off. That's
right,
description of the witness testimony. So odd behavior, changing directions very quickly.
So if those witnesses are telling the truth, then this is something pretty strange up there.
And as we like to point out, we like to, well, when we get testimony from people like police officers, like military officials, that lends credibility to their testimony.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, these are trained observers.
So. Right. Yeah, so that's a very interesting one.
Right. Well, here's some space news. NASA's Kepler spacecraft launched in March 2009 with the mission of discovering potentially life-supporting planets. And we talk about Kepler a lot on this show. To date, Kepler has discovered more than 2,000 planet candidates and 61 confirmed planets. According to scientists, one of these recently confirmed planets is the best candidate for a planet capable of supporting life. This giant planet called, and again, they didn't let us down with their exciting names.
Yeah.
Brace yourselves. And I expect you to remember this. The planet is called GJ667C.
Boring.
Yep, boring. Well, this planet is at least 4.5 times as massive as Earth. And according to Space.com, a team of scientists determined that the planet's location is within the habitable zone of its star. And as we've mentioned before, this is a narrow region where temperatures are neither too hot or too cold for liquid water to exist on the planet's surface. One of the scientists stated, "This planet is the new best candidate for supporting liquid water and perhaps life as we know it." Space.com explains that the researchers suspect, quote, potentially habitable alien worlds could exist in a greater variety of environments than was previously thought possible. That's based on these new findings. The team's research will be published in the Astrophysical Journal Letters.
GJ, so let's call it Gojo or Gaja.
They really need to work
on it. Let's call it Gojo. This is a Gojo system, and this is Gojo C.
Okay.
That's how I'm going to refer to it so we can remember. But another interesting thing is
You'll have to remind me about that.
Yeah. I thought this was kind of cool. It wasn't the Kepler people who found this. It was a different group. And what they decided was Kepler's looking at stars that are thousands of light years away. So they wanted to focus on the stars that are closer. And so this one is relatively much closer, 22 light years away, as opposed to thousands of light years. And this one is a good candidate, and it's not that far. And it would only take, if we sent a robotic probe out there to check it out, it will only take 100 years to get there.
Yeah, that's much closer.
Yeah. But I think that's probably like Google, though, where you Google the map, and it tells you how long it's going to take. But it tells you if you go the speed limit. So
right.
Maybe if we crank this puppy up, we can get it there a little quicker to figure it out. Although they are going to do that thing where they can look at it and try to figure out by the colors the gases on the planet so that maybe they can find some methane so they know there are a lot of animals down there that are gassy.
Gassy animals?
So they can tell evidence of gassy animals. But essentially,
that's a planet of gassy animals. We need to.
Animals are gassy. On this planet, animals emit gas.
Or methane producing cows.
Yeah. You emit gas probably all night long. I've never witnessed it, I don't think, though.
Only while I'm on the air.
But there's some certain, and I won't name their names, but there are definitely other co-workers here at Open Minds where I have witnessed that gaseous emission, and it wasn't a pleasurable thing, but I could see how it could be measured because they're powerful.
You're releasing company secrets here.
Yeah, I'm going to get in trouble. So, but yeah, that's kind of cool that they're looking at closer ones because that this is relatively close. So, and I think it will be a big deal. I mean, if that there's life fairly close, relative in space terms, that's more evidence that there could be intelligent civilizations closer.
It's something very important and very good that's coming out of these, it seems, with every new planet they discover, is that the search for extraterrestrial life, when looking at these planets, it's, each one they find, they have to reevaluate how they search for extraterrestrial life. They discover things and determine, well, based on these findings, we need to readjust because now we know that these planets are more common than we thought.
Yeah.
Now we know better what to look for, and everything gets readjusted, and it kind of starts over again.
Yeah. And they really are going to be looking at the gases to see if there's life evidence in the atmosphere for life. But exactly, here again, yet again, and we keep hearing this over and over and over again, that we didn't think there would be life there, but now it's looking like there is possibly life there. So now we already have this increase of possible planets that could possibly harbor life, and now that increases even more. So here again, more evidence of life, and I think that once we discover life out there, which is a matter of time, I think people will then really be open to, wow, if really life is that abundant, then there is, I think they'll take even more serious the possibility of civilizations and think even harder about some of these unknown objects that, hey, you know, maybe we are being visited.
And another great thing to take from this story is that it's just another example of, as you pointed out, you know, this wasn't necessarily just specifically the Kepler team who did this study. There are researchers all over the globe evaluating the data that's coming back from Kepler and similar studies. So you have scientists all over the world taking or actively participating in the search for extraterrestrial life, and these are mainstream scientists. So again, it illustrates the point that science is interested in extraterrestrial life, and they're actively looking for it.
And I want just another quick point, because this is something I keep thinking of about mainstream science and the search for extraterrestrial life, is that, you know, even in our media and our entertainment, especially in Star Trek, there's this big idea, of course, that if in the future we were to go out there and find extraterrestrial civilizations, we would leave them be if they were less developed than us, and we would hide our presence, but we would study them. I mean, this is an old theory that's been out there for a long time. It's surprising that mainstream scientists aren't imaginative enough, even though they are sci-fi fans, a lot of them are creative enough to think that that is a possibility of what we're experiencing right now. It's just kind of shocking to me that they wouldn't give more credence to that idea, because it's not that much of a leap. And even if we hypothesize that's how we would react in the future, it is kind of shocking how closed people are to that idea.
They seem extremely close to it.
Yeah,
I don't find it that shocking.
What's up with that?
Demonstrated behavior. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is up with that? Well, Alejandro, I'm going to briefly give some sad news. UFO researcher Lou Farish passed away on January 26th. He died of cancer, but he reportedly died peacefully, was not in pain, and was surrounded by a small group of friends. Lou is a well-liked and humble researcher. He is remembered for his UFO news clipping service, as well as his founding the Ozark UFO Conference. And Alejandro, this is really cool. Because Lou did not have a wife, children, or siblings, he left his estate, including 80 acres of land, to a trust to be used to encourage UFO research and education through awards, fellowships, and many grants over the next several years.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
That's really cool. And you can read more about Lou and what he's done on openminds.tv. Antonio Huneas wrote a nice article. Antonio and he were good friends over the years. So check that out on openminds.tv.
Yeah, what Lou did was really important, because before the internet, you know, he had to actually go cut out these newspaper clips, and he would copy them and send them to thousands of people and all the big researchers so they could keep up to speed on the media before there were like news. There were like Twitter feeds like we have that update people on the news.
Snail mail Twitter feeds, yeah.
Yep.
And I have no idea how Lou did that.
Yeah.
That seems like a terrible undertaking to do that in a time before the internet, you know, to somehow gather these news articles from around the country, from around the world.
Yeah, important work too. So, and he was well loved. So,
he was an early version of the internet.
Yep.
The Google News feeds.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, did you watch the Super Bowl?
No.
Yeah, I only caught half of it. But if you didn't know, this past Sunday, yesterday, was the Super Bowl here in the United States, the American Football Championship game. And historically, it's been the most watched program on American television. In fact, the 2011 Super Bowl had the largest audience ever for a U.S. television broadcast at 111 million viewers. And this year's big game broke last year's record, reaching 111.3 million viewers. But in addition to breaking the viewership record again, something else from the 2011 Super Bowl was repeated this year, and that was the appearance of extraterrestrial-themed advertisements.
I think that's happened every Super Bowl ever.
Probably. So. And that shows that advertisers know there's this public interest.
Yeah.
Because as we've mentioned before, I wrote about it last year, and I wrote about it a little bit again this year, but advertisers spend millions of dollars for these 30-second spots. This is like the prime advertising of the year for these people. They spend millions of dollars for a couple seconds to advertise their product, and it seems over and over they're choosing to use extraterrestrials or an extraterrestrial theme to pitch their product to the public.
Especially during the Super Bowl, it seems, too, because maybe they're more theatrical and they spend more money on those, but during the regular season, you know, you don't see as much of that. But definitely in the Super Bowl, some of the most popular UFO commercials have come out during this, or ET commercials mm-hmm. have come out during the Super Bowl. It'd be interesting for someone to compile those. That would be interesting.
It would be interesting. There was a lot last year, and a lot of the UFO-related movies
yeah.
tend to advertise and advertise first during the Super Bowl.
Battleship
just did yeah. theirs during the Super Bowl, and I haven't really seen much advertising for Battleship
right.
in terms of advertisements on TV, but they certainly showed a spot during the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I know last year they did Cowboys and Aliens.
Oh, was that it? Or was it Super 8 also?
I don't think they did Super 8.
Maybe
they did,
because
they did two last year, and mm-hmm. I don't remember what the other one was. But car commercials have been using this a lot. Last year, Kia yeah. did theirs, where the car gets abducted. And they even had the Mayan thing yeah. in that same commercial. And this year, Chevy stole both of those themes in two different commercials. But they had one that was a Mayan apocalypse 2012 type thing, and there was a crashed yeah. UFO in that one.
Yeah.
But this other one has a bunch of little extraterrestrials in the car with a garage.
It's a funny commercial, too. Yeah. They're both actually pretty funny. They're pretty good.
But again, it's an illustration showing that they know that there is this huge public interest in the subject.
Well, especially and probably because this is the group. As we know from our buddies and from the TV shows, it's mostly older males who are into football and into UFOs. They're the ones that are the most watch these shows the most and everything. So it's a good fit. And cars,
yeah.
And chicks.
Target demographic.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, Alejandro, I wanted to talk about this story to finish off the news because I know you recently wrote about it. But this was an interesting one from last week. On Thursday, February 2nd, witnesses across Texas and Oklahoma reported seeing a large fireball shooting across the sky. Another fireball UFO.
Mm-hmm.
The object was even caught on the patrol, on the dashboard camera of a police chief in Little River Academy. Police Chief Troy Hess said, quote, "It kept getting bigger and the colors kept changing." But according to the Daily Mail, the FAA says the bright streaking light was most likely a meteor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this one, what I piqued my interest, one of the things in the story is that what some of the witnesses said they saw, which is this big bright light going through the air with stuff coming off of it, was similar to what I saw when there was a similar sighting over California and Nevada and Phoenix here, or Arizona. But what I saw broke up. But there were so many people that saw so much, it seems that what I saw wasn't the only one. Although it was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, this huge thing breaking up in the sky.
What you saw in some of the description from this one, too, mm-hmm. you know, the colors are similar, and that's yeah. what you see with some of the larger meteors, the greenish color.
Yeah. So it's kind of weird. And maybe we're capturing more of these on film because there's more cameras and stuff around, but pretty weird, and some of the witnesses are like, man, I don't know if that really was a meteor. It was really weird.
Right. And depending on, you know, if it was an actual extraterrestrial craft, you know, who knows what the material it would be made
yeah.
out of. But, you know, that's why you see the different colors, the green and yeah. whatever colors from these meteors based on its composition. So composition of a craft coming in, crashing to Earth, I suppose, could look similar. So
the probes on Hoth, remember that?
That's right. Very
that were
good,
sent
Alejandro.
To Hoth. Those looked like a meteor, but they were probes that came up, and then Han Solo had to blow them up.
Right. And the interesting thing with these fireball UFOs that we, you know, seem to report on over and over and over again, a lot of people are seeing these more frequently now.
Mm-hmm.
Their impact site is really reported about.
Yeah. No impacts. Yeah. So it's very strange. It's kind of weird. This keeps happening. Reminds me of a terrible movie, Battle LA. But the special effects were kind of neat when on that part. But yeah,
I still haven't watched it because you talked about it.
Special effects are fun, but it's kind of a dumb story. If you just, you know, go into it knowing that, you might have some fun.
Yeah. Well, good to know. Alejandro, that is it for the news. Remember, everyone, you can check out all of these stories and so many more at Open Minds TV, your source for UFO-related news. I'm Jason McClellan, your Open Minds news correspondent, and you've been briefed. Back to you, Alejandro.
Thank you, Jason. Remember, you can read all these stories at openminds.tv and the Texas video you can see at ufodailynews.com. And remember, that's also where you can go. If you're not on Twitter, you can go to ufodailynews.com and hit the UFO news feed. And those are all the Twitter links where you can see all of the headlines from around the world on not just a daily basis, but practically hourly. So lots of stuff going on there. But we're going to do something. We actually have, usually we pre-record the shows and these days. But this time we are doing it live, and so we're actually going to dial Cliff up right now. And you know what happens when we do that? We do some dialing music. So let's dial. Do 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 do. We are dialing Cliff. Ba da ba 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 boo da boo do do. Hello. We're talking to Cliff. Hello, please answer the phone, Cliff. I just talked to him. Cliff
speaking.
Hey. Thank you, because, you know, when I dial people, I do a little dialing music, and I was stretching it, and it was kind of losing quality. So I'm glad that you answered when you did, because you spared our listeners the rest of my dialing music. But thank you so much for being on the show again.
You're welcome, Alejandro. It's nice to be with you.
I have given you a title, and I hope you like it. I think you will. And earlier in the show, because I said, out of all the MUFON directors, going back the decades that this organization has been in existence, that you were, if nothing else, by far the wittiest director they've ever had.
Well, I thank you for that.
And I mean that as a very esteemed compliment.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, that's very nice of you to say that. Humor is always part of what I think is important in life.
You know, and that's a good question to start off, because you are witty, and I think that that is important in other people. Has that helped you to kind of bring up and talk about this subject, which can be uncomfortable for some people?
It definitely has, Alejandro. Sometimes people just take themselves too serious, and we have to be aware of the fact, in my opinion, that life is important. It's very precious, but we have to be able to stop, smell the roses, and laugh a little bit along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. I mean, and, you know, it's just like everything. I think that it's always important to have a little bit of lightness brought, because if you get too down in anything, you know, it just makes, it can actually have bad health repercussions and that you stress out, but it also can hamper you from moving forward.
Exactly. If you free your mind up, you are able to be more productive, more positive, and upbeat, and humor is a vehicle that I like to use to do that.
Well, and let's talk about this. I want to hear about your experience, because I loved this. I thought it was great. Some people didn't, but, you know, those are probably people who need to lighten up a little more. But your appearance on, I think last time you were on, it hadn't aired yet, and it did air, but your appearance on the Colbert Report.
It was Jon Stewart.
Oh, it was Jon Stewart, actually. Okay.
Yes.
You know, did you have fun with that? What were your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, I knew it was going to be a comedy show, and I had been warned about this.
Mm-hmm.
They flew me to New York and put me up for the night, and drove me around in a limousine to the shoot site at the park in New Jersey. And when we got there, then I saw Wyatt, who is on the show, and he was there, and I thought
I've never met the guy. I've never even seen him.
So I may not have been as impressed.
Right.
But anyway, I'm getting feedback here. Are we okay?
Yeah, everything sounds okay on this side.
All right. All right. I'll continue to try to talk with this, but here's the funny thing about it. I spent an hour trying to... Are you there, Alejandro?
Yes.
Okay. I spent an hour of the shoot trying to be serious and talk about MUFON and what we were doing, and that was going nowhere. So I thought, okay, I just as well play along. Now, the part that I thought was the funniest was when Wyatt dressed up like an alien, and he had prepped me prior to this. There were about 8 people out there doing the shoot, and they prepped me and said, okay, what would you say if an alien walked up to you? And I said, well, I'd ask them where they're from, what they're doing here, how they got here, and why they're here. So, okay, so they put Wyatt in a suit, an alien suit with a big head, and he had a keyboard from a computer, and he came walking up to me going, all right, yeah, blah, blah, blah. I said, hi, where are you from? And he said, well, are all Pleiades? And I said, looks to me like you came from Uranus. That was never shown.
That would have been one of the best jokes.
Yeah, it would have been. So anyway, it was. Some people were very upset with it, but the fact of the matter is, we got more positive comments and membership grew because of that show than anything we had done in that period of time. So it was a very beneficial thing for MUFON. Although it was at the expense of me and MUFON as far as the humor goes.
Although, you know, I don't know so much personally. Here's my perspective on it, is that it got the word out. There are a lot of people that are interested in this topic, and they don't know MUFON is there, and now they are aware, so I'm sure they went there to find out what you guys were all about. And, I mean, they make fun of everybody, so you had a good, you know, sense of humor about it. But they also interviewed the NASA guys, and, you know, they're making fun of the NASA guy saying, why aren't you doing what MUFON is doing, you know, trying to...
You don't have a star team.
Yeah, you guys don't even have a star team. This is ridiculous. So no wonder you lost your funding. So he made fun of them just as much, and that guy didn't really seem to have a sense of humor about it.
No, he was not. As a matter of fact, after our shoot, Wyatt said to me, he says, you're really a good guy.
So
it was an exciting thing. Yeah, we got some bad press on it, and you know, the good press outweighed the bad in the long run.
I think so, you know, because even I'll get that, and I can understand their perspective. I can always understand people's perspective mostly when they get a hold of it.
Yeah,
but I get that sometimes. Oh, you know, this is a serious subject. I like your show and you have serious people on, but you goof around too much sometimes. But you know what? Yeah, I just don't think it's healthy to really let yourself get too worked up about a lot of things, because otherwise, you know, it's not healthy. And you know, being light, I think, also allows your brain, frees your brain up to be more creative, to come up with more and better ideas on how to approach this. And you reach a larger audience.
You're exactly right, yeah. I can overplay humor. I have to be careful of that sometimes. But in the long run, I think the humor is important. It helps people.
Yeah. So the big question is, you've already answered this for people who are in MUFON. You've written about your retirement and this month, which it's only been a few days that you're not the director anymore. And maybe if you could just let people know the details behind it, because I know some people are thinking that you may be fed up with MUFON, or there's some kind of the government got to you and said, hey, you better cut it out.
I wish we were as important as all of that, where the government comes to us and says, you guys have to knock it off. we are not that important to the government, period. That's just silliness. The government doesn't care what we do. They have not infiltrated MUFON. Why would they? They don't need to. If they want any of the information that we have, all they have to do is go to our website, or if they want to monitor our emails, they can do that. There's nothing secret from the government, but so it's just that's kind of silly. But the reason that I did step down is I need to. The 2 years that I was there as international director, Alejandro, were very difficult times financially. When we started out, when I took over, we were having some very significant financial problems, and that took about 6 months to a year to get that resolved. And then we had the other conflict that developed, and that took another year to get through all of that. And so I was in crisis management primarily my whole term. Well, that takes a toll on a person mentally. Mm-hmm. And I was able to overcome it through humor and through my belief in God. So that was fine. But the big thing was I wanted to do some other things. I really do. I'm 72, and I don't have that many years to do the things that I want to do. And I can't give MUFON 1,000% or anything else if I want to do other things. And probably the primary thing is my oldest son has stage 4 colon cancer and just got out of the hospital here again 2 days ago, yesterday, as a matter of fact. So I wanted to spare more time with him and the family, and I can't do all of this stuff. So MUFON was the one thing that I had to remove myself from.
Mm-hmm. Which makes sense. I mean, completely understandable, because I don't think people realize, and I try to emphasize this always, is that there are MUFON takes a lot of work to run, just the basic day-to-day getting it done, keeping this organization existing takes so much effort. You board members, especially people like you, not so much with all the board members, but I know because I've had some insight, and of course I'm not going to name names or anything, but some people, especially you, have always put in a lot of work for many years, and I don't think people realize that. And then you have, you know, these people in the States, and it's hard to run even a state organization. That takes a lot of work, let alone the national part. So you have these pockets of people out there working really hard to keep the organization running, and it's because of all these people it's been around for so long. And I know you've put in a lot of hours for many years.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't think the average person realizes how much time and effort goes in to what a state section director, the investigators, the state directors, the chief field investigators, how much time these folks put in. And then you go to Fletcher Gray, the STAR team manager, and you go on to Morgan Bell, that's director of technology, and the people that are working with him. The time and effort these folks are putting into this organization is just unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And they believe, they have a passion. We're all after the same goals, the education and investigations, that type of thing. And then, of course, you have the board of directors who put in a significant amount of time continually, all the time, trying to make sure that we're financially stable and we have the right people in the right places. And, of course, they're all volunteers, Alejandro, so we just rely on the integrity of the character of the person that volunteered to do a job.
Mm-hmm.
And so it does. And then, of course, as the international director, it's 24/7. We're represented in 25 foreign countries, and there's a lot of time difference there. So if you're not getting phone calls and emails, you're thinking about how to promote and to best execute our goals and the methods of getting there. And it's a very time-consuming thing. And, of course, I don't have the time to do that with my son and with the things that I want and to do with my family. And it wouldn't be fair to MUFON for me to try to continue and not being given the percentage, the 1,000% I need to.
And even more important, I mean, and this comes into play, it's something people have to realize, people like in your situation and others, it wouldn't be fair to your family. I mean, you need to spend some time with them, especially when it comes to trying times. And that's so important. So, you know what, you put in your time, and I want more time. I mean, I know I've been there to see it, and that you've put in so many hours, and I think that you deserve definitely a thanks from everybody in this who's interested in this field, because it's important what you've done to keep it going, and you know, thank you for all the work that you've done.
Well, thank you for saying that. That's very nice of you, and you're welcome, and everybody's welcome for what I have done. The thanks are just, I can't tell you how many people have emailed me and called me and thanked me for what I've done and wishing well for the family. So it's just been really rewarding.
And, you know, you've talked about some of the trials and tribulations, and I know there have been some hard things going on in the last few years, and maybe we'll talk about what's been some of the biggest hurdles or hardest things for you. But I do have to say, from my perspective, from someone who's following, my thing is, you know, I'm typically mostly following mainstream media and what they think of this topic and how they cover this topic. And, you know, MUFON has done very well during your tenure with mainstream media, because mostly you all are seen in the news out there. It's rare these days, and it used to not be like this, that it's rare these days to see an article that's just solely ridicule. If MUFON's in the article, it's often referring to MUFON as experts. Often you have skeptics. People are saying, well, we're not so sure that was a UFO. We think this might have been something more mundane. But you have people who are coming across as not just people who are wacky or anything. They come across as professionals. And MUFON's gotten a great reputation, I think, with the general public, which is the most important thing. And that's what I've seen in the last few years.
Yeah, I think so. We've been getting some great press from numerous members of the media, from Wall Street Journal to Huffington Post and George Knapp and you guys, and it just goes on, and we've been getting a lot of real positive good comments about what MUFON's up to. And I get calls continually from people and emails, or I did. They're all forwarded to Dave now, but wanting to know what we as the experts think about this, what we think about that, how can you guys investigate, and how do you investigate, and just really some great information that they want, which we're able to provide.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, which is so important, that, and I know from my years working with the media, with MUFON, what's important to them is that you have local people all over the place who they can talk to near them to get their take on, you know, there was a local sighting
here in
San Diego. You know, what is the local San Diego MUFON? Think about that.
Right. A good case of what you're talking about is what's happened in Missouri this past winter and fall. With all the UFO activity there, Debbie Ziegelmeyer and
I'm going to let you struggle with it because I can't remember. Yeah, okay, there you go.
Margaret, and they have just done an outstanding job with the media, and I referred a lot of the media to them because they're the boots on the ground, knowing what was going on. I didn't know, but I knew what they were reporting, but I didn't know the real intricacies that they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we had Debbie on not too long ago to talk about all of that, and she is now a board member, right? An interim, at least, board
right.
member.
Right, yeah, she is, and she is a dynamo. I am very impressed with the lady. She's a real asset to the board.
Yep, she's a friend and a wonderful person, and we're going to see her at the Congress in a couple weeks, so that's exciting.
Yes, that'll be good. Her brother Chuck is speaking before I am, and I will probably be able to break bread with them at least one night, and I enjoy that. So Chuck Zukowski is excellent with the mutilations, and Debbie will be a great support for him and for MUFON.
Mm-hmm. Yep, she's a great lady. So, yep. Getting into your tenure and your years there, lately, and the Huffington Post did a story on this, and some other news sources did stories on this, about early in the year, this year, in January, how there seemed to be a lot of sightings. And some other group had interviewed Peter Davenport of New Fork, and he confirmed he was also getting an increase in reports. And then last summer, you know, there was a lot of press around MUFON and you doing interviews and talking about an increase in sightings. Do you think we've seen a trend over the last few months or years of increases in sightings?
I think so. This last year, we got a significant amount of activity. August of 2011, we had like 1,013 sightings reported to us. And that was significant because we averaged 500 a month. We're now averaging 600 a month.
Yeah.
So it just keeps bumping up, and I wouldn't be surprised if this year isn't going to be another banner year. And I think one of the things, the reason for the great increase is I think there is more activity, but also I think people are more aware because of the media coverage that the UFO phenomenon has received. I think that's significant. And that gives people, now they know a place to report UFO sightings, and that's to MUFON, and they know that they will be investigated, and they know that they can remain anonymous if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
So now they're coming to us significant numbers.
And with this increase, you've also kind of, I remember one of the stories, and maybe it was Lee's story from Huffington Post, that you personally said you had noted that there also seemed to be an increase in the unknowns, the number, the percentage of those sightings that can't be explained or investigators can't figure out what it was. It doesn't seem to be something mundane.
Well, I think the number of unknowns goes up with the number of sighting reports.
Mm-hmm.
We average, but we figure there's 10 to 20% of the UFO sighting reports to MUFON would be unidentified flying objects. So if we have 500, that would be 50 to 100 unidentified. Mm-hmm. So if we have 1,000, we've got 100 to 200. So I think that this is the way it carries. It's the reason, the more sightings, the more unidentified.
Right, which when it comes to, you know, the numbers you're talking about, when you're talking about 600 reports, that means like 60 to 100 unknowns a month. That's a lot.
Yes, it is. And of that, we've been averaging 14 reports a month of landings and or takeoffs.
Wow.
And averaging 4 per month of entities seen on the ground.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because as you're reporting more of those sort of instances, those haven't seemed to have gotten to the mainstream press yet. Because you are seeing, I think, an increase in sighting reports and taken seriously in some cases by the mainstream media. But you don't hear about the landings or the entities as much.
Well, as a rule, the ones that report the entities are usually a little suspect.
Mm.
You don't know if they're talking about they haven't had enough time of observation of the entities and or the landing craft to really give us a good picture of exactly what happened. That's what we would like to be able to do, but it might be 1 or 2 seconds. The beings jumped back in the craft and it took off right away, and it was at about 500 feet away. Those kinds of things are the ones that are hard for us to really put our investigative hands around, because there's not enough information, enough time to have seen it to really verify that was extraterrestrial or unidentified.
Right. It's interesting because, it harkens back what I think of as the 70s, because the 70s even have some people refer it as the years of the aliens and stuff, because that's when we had there were a lot of sightings. There were waves of sightings more so back then. It was certainly a sort of increase, but there are also an increase of sightings similar to what you're describing, landings. And
1973 was the year of the humanoids.
Right, there you go.
And it was, I've been reading some of the cases. Now that I have the time to go through the archives and research and correlate the activities, which I will be speaking about at your conference too. But the thing that's exciting about it is there's some really good humanoid cases that have come up. But then there are some really funny ones. I have to share this one with you because we were talking about humor. This guy reported that he saw this. He and some policemen saw this object crash that was a small disc-type thing, and they got up to it, and this little guy rolled out of the craft, and the policeman got him, woke him up, and slapped him around a little bit, and the little guy jumped up and knocked the patrolman out. And that went on 2 or 3 times. At the end of the story, the guy says, well, the being was 2 foot tall and weighed 300 pounds.
Oh, my gosh.
He would have had to have been 7 foot wide.
Tall.
2 foot tall and 300 pounds. So those are the funny ones, but there are some that are really significant events. That they had some, Alejandro, that were, we have 3 cases that I've just reviewed that of the flying beings and how they have jet packs or something like that, but there's no noise or no exhaust, but they're just moving around, and it's a human being looking type thing that's moving around. 3 of those cases, and they were all, and I know the 3 people that were in different parts of the country never communicated back and forth about this. It just happened. So they saw something. I'm not sure exactly what it was, but they believe it was human or a human type being, or not a human, a being of some type that was moving through the air. very strange. So there was one of them that was looking in the window of a house, and the guy went out and they communicated telepathically, and he said, we're not here to hurt you, we're just checking you out and finding out what's going on. And then he was about 5-6 foot tall, somewhere in that neighborhood, and looked like a human being, and he got back in his craft and took off.
Weird. Now, I don't know what kind of insight this gives you to me, but I was born in 1973.
Well, I've been meaning to talk to you about a few things there, Alejandro.
And that was me that that guy saw. No, that was the crap. They were dropping me off. They were like, could you take care of this guy? We're going to leave
him. You do resemble a hybrid.
Yeah. Now, these cases you're talking about, are they cases from 73 or are they...
In the 72, 73, and 74,
Are you seeing any similar cases now in some of these landing or entities coming on the ground, similarities between the 70s and now?
No, I have not seen that similarity at all. But I haven't been through all of the cases. We've got cases that reported in 1994 that happened in 1961 by right. people who finally have said, hey, I've kept this long enough and I'm got maybe a year left on this earth and I'm going to tell this story. And they tell the story and it's very significant. So we've got cases that are just amazing that have happened, and I'm going to hopefully be able to put all of these into a book form that will allow people to see the MUFON files that we've got from over the years.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's great, and that's what is exciting about what MUFON's done, is that a lot of that data is still available and there. It just takes the work for people to go through it and to collect it and put it together.
Exactly. We've got I've got about 10,000 cases, plus I don't know how many thousand of journal articles that are archived, plus proceedings and other things to go through. I just I shipped everything to Cincinnati for Dave, but I did keep, for an example, some of the Gulf Breeze information. And I've got pictures of the Mantell aircraft that are great pictures of the craft, of the airplane that crashed, and of these other things. And I'm going to try to get all this information into one usable, readable form that it would be available for the public. And I think we've got to get this information out. It's just it's high time we did.
Right. And as some people don't know, it's not a matter of information not being shared. It's more a matter of it is in the journal and some people don't get the journal. But it's also a matter of the work. There aren't people to put in the work to get this information and get it out there.
I spent 4 hours today in the archives, and I got from 62 to 65.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Well, it's each year there gets to be more, because when we came into existence in 1969, that's when the real volume starts. But right. we've got a lot of stuff that's reported to us that was reported to NICAP and APRO and investigated by some of the big name ufologists of the past, Hynek. Mm-hmm. And Rodiger, and Mark's not of the past, but these guys did a lot of research and are still doing it.
Yep. Now, out of some of these older files you've ran across, are there some that it's like, or maybe many, where you run across these stories and you're like, wow, this is amazing. It's unfortunate, you know, this needs to get out there.
Yeah. I will tell you one that I'm going to talk about more at depth at your conference, but it happened in 1961. The guy reported it to us into MUFON in 1994. He's a retired aerospace engineer and a retired minister. He was a college student at the University of Illinois, living in a housing project, and he was one Saturday evening about 6 o'clock, his buddy lived a couple of doors down, and in between them lived a little old German lady. Well, they were going to the library at the university, so they called and said, we'll meet. So they both walked out the door simultaneously, and his buddy mouth fell open, he looked behind him, and here was a flying saucer with portals about 100 feet above the ground, moving at about 5 to 10 miles an hour, no noise, and it was going between right above and between the buildings of this housing complex. When they looked up and saw the object, he was very detailed. He was very articulate in his report, and he drew a picture of it, which I'll be presenting. And he said when they both saw it, the little lady was out watering her flowers in front of her apartment there, and she saw it, and they all three saw it at the same time. She threw her apron over her face and went running back into her house.
Wow.
And there were six or eight other people that had seen this. Well, the next day they saw the little old lady again, and they asked her, says, did you see that last night? She said, I didn't see anything.
Mm-hmm. So she wants nothing with it.
She was terrified. But that was a significant event. I mean, very significant. I think that one, if it could have been investigated at the time, as we would today, this would have been as big as Roswell.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just when you have that many credible witnesses that with their background of being in, he was also, the student was also a private pilot at that time, so he knew aircraft and he knew how to define what he was looking at, and it was pretty amazing. So those kinds of things happened. If one of those happened today, it would be, oh my goodness, wouldn't it be something?
Yeah, and it is, because they had the same problem back then as we have now, just a lack of resources. And it makes me think of Ruppelt's book, you know, who ran Blue Book, and he wrote about it, and he talked about, you know, for instance, some of these engineers who told them, well, we had sightings. And he said, well, why haven't you reported it to the Air Force? And they said, well, you guys aren't going to take it seriously. You don't take it serious. And he said, yeah, they will. They submit a sighting, and sure enough, you know, they get a response that blows them off. And Ruppelt was kind of embarrassed by this because he was thinking, you know, some of these guys who just reported this were probably professors to the people who blew them off. I mean, these guys knew what they were talking about. But unfortunately, a lack of resources even back then.
That's exactly right. And the other thing is, from the Robinson panel from 1953, they have they put the squelch on anybody reporting them. They're kooks, they're nuts, drunks, hallucinations, all that type of thing, to keep people from reporting them, because they didn't want the White House's telephone lines plugged up like the Pentagon and military bases with these UFO sightings. So they said, you've got to belittle and make fun of these people that are reporting them. So people did not want their names associated with any UFO report. And now I read these reports, they want to remain anonymous, or the old reports want to remain anonymous. The ones we get today, oh yeah, you bet, put my name in there, you bet, put it on YouTube, I'm the one. They're all wanting the day in the limelight today, but back then they didn't want to talk about it.
Right. Yeah, I want to ask you about that change, that if you've seen a difference over the year. We often call it the giggle factor, you know, where they make fun. Because the Robertson panel was very effective. I mean, that did happen. People were called kooks, and even that happened somewhat today. But it seems to be starting to go away. As you said, people don't all want to be anonymous anymore. Now, especially in the last couple of years, we've had a lot of celebrities. Sammy Hagar, you know, is really in the news. Katy Perry and some of these others talking about this stuff. It seems like that might be changing. You think it is?
I think it is. I think it's becoming more acceptable. The strange thing is, there's an awful lot of things becoming more acceptable that some of them I'm not too fond of, but mm-hmm. that's the way it is. I think it's a lot more acceptable, and people are pretty interested in seeing that things get reported.
Mm-hmm. And not as afraid, I guess, to remain anonymous or to report them.
Right. That's the one thing that I'm noticing. Used to be probably 90% or more back in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even into the 80s, that they were, I'll report this, but do not use my name. And, of course, that's one of the significant factors about MUFON's investigations. We will maintain the anonymity of a witness if that's what they desire. But today we're finding back then, nobody, it didn't seem, everybody seemed like they wanted anonymity. But today, no, that's fine. You can use my name.
Mm-hmm.
So there has been a definite change.
And do you think that, we may seem, when this comes to the mainstream, do you think perhaps that the mainstream is taking this more serious, or do you think we still have a long way to go there?
No, I think the media, I think we're finally getting some of the reporters of the media that are looking at this at a more, what the world is going on? There's something going on here.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you an example, Alejandro, I was asked to speak at a service club, and there were about 50 people, and the program chairman contacted me and asked if I'd talk about UFOs, and I said, sure. And so I gave my presentation, and about it included MUFON and all the information about MUFON and sighting reports and that type of thing. After the meeting, I had some people come up and said, you know, I've always poo-pooed this, but says, you're making a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And the guy, the program chairman, just as a matter of fact, a week ago, he said to me, he said, Cliff, I had quite a few people saying, what kind of deal are you giving us about these UFOs?
Right.
And laughed at it. And afterwards, he said, they told me they enjoyed the show. Well, I think people are not that I'm good. It's just that information.
It's you too.
So, well, whatever. But they were highly impressed with the fact that there is something going on.
Yeah, yeah, and it seems, you know, that's what's wonderful about all of this stuff. That even today, you know, a lot of people cover Kenneth Arnold and Roswell and lots of that stuff. But there's a lot in this field, a lot of the really credible stuff that people, that isn't covered by the documentaries and things, and that people still don't know about. So there's certainly a lot of credible and eye-opening stuff for us to share to the general public.
Yeah, you know, when you said Kenneth Arnold, Alejandro, one of the things that I noticed and I found in the archives were 5 investigations of UFO events by Kenneth Arnold.
Hmm, really?
Yeah. I thought, wow, that's interesting.
And these were his sightings or ones that he investigated?
Ones he investigated of other people reporting them.
Oh, wow. Yeah, you know, we had Paula Harris on recently. She's going to be at the conference, and she did an interview that we're going to have in our magazine with Kenneth Arnold's daughter. And, yeah, she said he was really into the topic, and he, in fact, had several other sightings, but he was so, because he was made fun of and it was such a headache, that he didn't report them.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, when I say that, I'll look back again through those. But I know he investigated them for others, but, you know, I'm just wondering if maybe he didn't use a pseudo name and just reported what he saw.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Other researchers have been suspected of doing that sort of thing.
Uh-huh, right. So maybe, but it's a very interesting when you start seeing these names pop up and the things that they did that were not as out in the press or the public as much as some, like Kenneth Arnold's when he coined the term flying saucers and saw the 9 objects. That was a significant event. There are other things that they have done that are also significant, and they don't get reported as much.
Mm-hmm. Now, and when you're going back through this, are you seeing a lot of credible people? I mean, do you see a lot of, like you had an engineer, are you seeing lots of engineers or professors?
Yes, professors. One, I just read one this afternoon, and it's blurred with the others, but the thing that caught my attention, he was a professor at a university, did not believe in UFOs and thought they were a bunch of malarkey until he had his sighting. And he said, I could not explain that, and in any manner, there's no aircraft that can move as fast as this thing did, up and down and back and forth, and was very close to him. So this is a professor from a university. He didn't want the university or the name released. I remember that, so I won't say that. But there's professors, there's policemen. One policeman in Oregon, a police chief, had two events. And one of them, at first when he tried to brush it away, and the second one, he says, I can't ignore this any longer. He said, these are real craft. This is not imaginary. People are not nuts. He says, what I saw that lit up the living room of my house with a blue light and was right above the house, he said, there is no way you can dismiss that as not being unidentified flying object.
Mm-hmm.
So, police chiefs, pilots. I have one report of a F-86 pilot that was on a collision course with a UFO, and I'll be reporting about that one, too, at the conference. And they flew right into the craft where it was, and it shot straight up, and they could see underneath it. It's an amazing story. So there's of course we know the astronauts. Some of the astronauts, Gordon Cooper and Story Musgrave was at the symposium this year. He has not seen anything, but there is no doubt in his mind that there is an intelligent life out there, more advanced, maybe not as advanced. But he says the odds for a planet like Earth being out there, he says there's a trillion of them just like Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So,
go ahead.
No, I just going to say, so that just indicates that if, in fact, somebody, look what we've done in 100 years with our mm-hmm. military aircraft and how we've gone to the moon. Another 100 years, no telling what will happen. If some culture from another planet is 500 years ahead of us or 1,000, they could do some things that we wouldn't understand today.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I remember being a kid, and now that I've revealed, you know, what year I was born, and watching, like, you know, Star Trek and thinking, wow, those communicators are so cool. I hope that one day, you know, by the time I pass away, that we will develop something that cool. And here we are. I've got a computer. I didn't even know we'd have computers, personal computers, and I've got a, you know, this iPhone personal computer where I have access to all this information right here in my pocket. So, I mean, our advancement is just, I think it's overwhelming for everyone.
Yeah, it really is. I remember reading Dick Tracy, Little Orphan Annie, when I was a kid, and he had a wristwatch he could talk into. So, wow, won't that be cool? Isn't that cool? Well, we got stuff very similar to that or better.
Yeah, exactly. It's amazing. When you talk about Story Musgrave, he didn't think, you know, surprisingly, he said he had heard all the stories of UFOs from astronauts, but he didn't think there was much to it. But he was adamant that certainly there must be life out there. Do you think, Jason and I were talking about this earlier, because astrobiology and the possibility of life on other planets is such a hot topic with scientists right now, and we seem to be on the cusp of finding some sort of life, the mainstream scientists revealing or having a discovery of some sort of life outside of our own planet. Do you think that's going to help people take this field more seriously?
I think it will. I think when it sinks in that there could possibly there are some people that are still so arrogant that they believe that we are the only life in the universe, that their paradigm will shift so significant when the discovery is finally made that I don't know how they'll be able to handle it. Mm-hmm. But the ones that are on, you know, well, maybe so, maybe no, I think that they're finding out we just I just read an article where they found a planet that's the exact location from a sun with a sun very similar to Earth that's, what, 60 light years away from us. It's the closest one, and the planet is larger than the Earth, but it has everything, according to the scientists and astrophysicists, that it would support life as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was just in the last few days.
Yeah, and these discoveries seem to be happening on a nearly daily, at least weekly basis.
Right, right. And I think this is... people are going to have to start saying, whoa, wait a minute. Well, that's still too... What they'll say is, well, it's still too far for them to get here. Well, their technology will not be a propulsion system as we know it. We know that. Mm-hmm. They're able to do things that we're not capable of doing.
Yeah, yeah. But we're moving a lot faster these days ourselves.
Yep, that's for sure. Way too fast.
Yeah, way too fast. Slow down, young fellas.
That's right.
So it is all really exciting. Do you have it seems like, as far as some of the, there was a little bit of rockiness, and I call it a little bit of rockiness for MUFON, because the general public, I don't think, really even knew there were some people internally that were dissatisfied. Sure, they made some noise in the circles amongst MUFON, but I don't think people really knew. And now, you know, because it's MUFON got such a strong base, you know, it's no problem taking it in stride and moved on. So I don't see that as really being an issue in the future. But for the future for MUFON in this field, how do you feel about it? Do you feel pretty positive?
I feel very good. I think we're Dave McDonald, the new international director, will be doing a great job. And our goals, you know, for research and education and investigation are still our primary goals, and that's what we want to do. And with the volunteer members that are out there that are doing just an outstanding job, it's we're going to continue to grow, and we're going to continue to maintain the integrity of a scientific investigation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's important. We, you know, from time to time, as you well know, Alejandro, we get people that they absolutely believe they saw a flying saucer or a UFO, and we can prove to them exactly what it was, but that is not something they want to hear.
Yeah.
So but that's few and far between, but there's still those people that really believe they saw something. Well, in fact, they scientifically we can prove that they saw something other than
mm-hmm.
the UFO.
Yeah. Now, Dave McDonald, he's got a trait similar to you that I really like. You know, I've got to see him at some symposiums and stuff. And like you, he almost always has a smile on his face, which is great. But I was wondering if you can tell us a little more about him, because his day job is pretty exciting.
Yeah, he has a charter airline, which he and his wife run. It's called Flamingo Air. He also has a pilot training school and a dispatcher training school. Now, he doesn't do the hands-on day-to-day things. He has people that do that, and any good manager does. They delegate and allow people to fulfill their destiny as long as it's in conjunction with his destiny.
Mm-hmm.
And he just is an amazing person that is able to do the things that are necessary for his business, but at the same time, he can still be international director and work 24/7 for it. So he's a good businessman. He's been down the road. He's been under the road and on top of the road. And he just is a good businessman, and that's what's so important about having an international director that's a businessman. I didn't have to know everything about UFOs. I didn't have to know all the intricacies that a STAR team member goes through to do an investigation. I'm the executive director. I had to make sure that everything was working in the right direction, everything's flowing from one spot to the other spot correctly, and that's what Dave's able to do. He knows how to direct and to put things in proper perspective to make sure that the overall umbrella of MUFON is maintained with integrity and science.
Which is, I think people need to realize too and take a step back when they're thinking about the MUFON leadership, in that, you know, this is an organization with a tough and literally unprecedented job of keeping this organization running, because organizations come and go, even the big ones, NICAP and KUFOS and some of these other organizations that we've been very important, that we've heard about in the past, ran by people like Hynek and these others. They've come and gone, but MUFON has been around since 69, collecting so much data, doing so much good work, and it's important that it continues, and that's what you guys are most focused on.
That's exactly right, and you need a line of succession, which is what I tried to build when I was there, because the future, there's a lot of gray-haired guys on the board of director, and it's, we
What's
need
wrong with
people
gray hair? I've got quite a bit these days.
Pardon me?
What's wrong with gray hair? I got quite a bit these days.
Well, there's really nothing wrong with it, but it is an indication of a proximity to meeting our maker. So anyway, I tried to keep a line of succession going, and that's why I brought on three interim directors so that they could fill the positions. I would suspect within the next 3 to 5 years there'll be a board turnover just because of age and health. So yeah, we've got to get people lined up that have the same ideas and goals that the MUFON has.
Well, that which is so important, and it's great that you guys have done such a great job. And I personally, from my perspective, and I have a lot of insight into all of it, you've done a wonderful job. And now we are almost out of time. And I guess my last question would be, what is the title of your talk going to be at the Congress?
It's going to be about the title of it is Undisclosed MUFON UFO Cases.
Oh, that's exciting.
So what I will be talking about, one of the things I've found, Alejandro, is that many people have heard of MUFON, but they don't know what we do. So my first maybe 10 minutes will be explaining MUFON so that they have a better understanding of how I can talk to them about the cases that I'm going to present to them from our archives.
Cool. Well, that's exciting. So we're out of time. Thank you so much for being on the show again. And people will be able to come to the conference and meet you. And I'm sure you're going to have a zinger opening joke and some good ones about the presentation.
Okay, Alejandro, thank you so much. It's been nice being on the air with you. I appreciate what you're doing. Keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later.
You bet. Bye.
Bye. All right, that was Mr. Clifford Cliff, who's always a lot of fun. And we are out of time, like I told Cliff, so be sure to go to UFOCongress.com and sign up so you can come out and meet Cliff. His talk, he's really piqued my interest. This sounds like it's going to be excellent talk, so I'm really excited about it. And also, of course, you heard some of the other names. Really, these are the names of people who have been asked, you know, have them come to talk at the Congress. And so we said, okay, if you want them, you're going to get them. So now you got to come see them. You're the one who asked for them. So it's going to be a lot of fun. But also, be sure to check out openminds.tv for some of the stories we talked about. And dailynews.net or .com. And also, you know, like I said, there's that UFO news feed where you can see more UFO stories from out in the mainstream media. And also go check out that Texas video there. So Thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week. Adios, muchachos.